Welcome to eHealth Talk, a podcast from Health Informatics New Zealand and hosted by me, editor of eHealth News, Rebecca Macbeth. This podcast provides a regular roundup of news and views from across New Zealand's data and digital health sector. Please be sure to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Hello and welcome to eHealth Talk NZ. In today's podcast, I'm talking to GP and Chief Clinical Information Officer of Shared Services Agency Health Alliance, Dr. Carl Cole, about data liquidity and the use of APIs to share data in the health system. Thanks for joining me, Carl.
Thank you, Rebecca. Good to be here.
Great. So before we get started, can you give us a brief explanation of data liquidity? Because it's a term I hadn't actually heard before. And also let our listeners know what a shared services agency like Health Alliance does.
Yeah, I'd say data liquidity is not an official term. I've seen it looked around, and I think it's a term that probably will grow in use to try and describe this problem we've got of data not being in the right place at the right time, and almost trying to define a property of how easy it is to get the data about a certain patient at the point of care. So it's not something that's considered much when we buy certain products, but now, as we'll talk later, I'm sure, becoming more of a focus. And it's really about interoperability and having that data easily available in the right location in all care settings to help inform healthcare. To your second part of the question, the shared service agency, Health Alliance, is a agency purposely set up and has grown from two DHBs to all four DHBs in the Auckland region to look after the shared part of many aspects of a DHB's running, back office, payroll, and where I'm working in the data application, clinical apps kind of world, but it covers the IT right down to the servers and all those switches, all that stuff that as doctors in the past I've sort of taken for granted and now have come to appreciate are actually quite complex things to keep going, right up to even the power and the reliability behind that.
Sounds like a big job. So Health Alliance provides services to the four DHBs in the northern region, but those DHBs and other local health providers do not necessarily share data about patients as they move between different services. Is that correct, and why is that?
That's a yes and no answer. I think for a lot of good work, despite the way things are set up in terms of funding and autonomy of the boards, there's been a lot of good work to allow data to be shared or to be shared by default, and bring together synergies of trying to do it once well. The e-referrals work in the last 5 to 6 years in the region has been a fantastic example of that. All GPs use the same e-referral standard across the four DHBs. Unfortunately, due to legacy, some things are a lot harder to combine. The patient administration systems are still separate in each DHB. There's many other examples where, despite good efforts, it's not a combined single instance regionally of things which you'd think would be ECGs, cardiology services, and things like that. What is a great example of what has been done through good work in the area is a clear test safe instance. It's called test safe from externally, but internally, most doctors and nurses or clinical people who work inside the DHBs would just see it as their clear tab in the original portal. That is a repository of much more stuff than just the traditional lab results that were inside a clear. Also, other procedures, gastroscopes, dispense medications have been put in there as almost de facto regional clinical repositories, but it does require you to have access to the application layer to get into it.
Right. So you obviously work as a GP in the region. So what kind of information do you have access to when you see patients, and what would you like to be able to see when you have a patient sitting in front of you?
It's more of a complex question than I first thought when you were thinking about that. I think I'd like to break it down to new patients I've never seen before. They haven't had a chance to have a data transfer from their GP. I have access through TestSafe, that a clear instance that what was the blood results, but nowadays much more is going into there, plus all the clinical outpatient documents, discharge summaries for the region, visits, and also the x-rays with the images through Xero. So it's actually not too bad. Even to 5 years ago, I can instantly get a feel if someone's reasonably sick. The most up-to-date discharge summaries and then their blood results from any GP and any hospital ordered blood results, x-rays have been done in the region. I don't have the high-level summary, and I can only guess at the medications through the dispense medications recorded in there. But it's a very good start. But it does require me to have access via my PMS, having the patient's NHI, and then going in and breaking the glass quite reasonably to say, I am looking after this patient. They're a visitor here, not enrolled with me, and I can go in and see that. Then there are people who are enrolled who I see regularly. I will see data in TestSafe that I don't have messaged to me because, quite reasonably again, I don't get every single blood result if someone's admitted to hospital. I'll get the discharge summary. So I might need to go in and get their weight, for example, that was done and recorded in hospital, put into a clear, but it's not messaged to me. So if I need to follow up and say, what's their weight? Has it changed? Do they need to adjust their water tablet, their furosemide, or is their heart failure changing? What was their weight when they discharged last week? I have to manually go in through a sign-on process, go into a web application and visually look at that weight rather than having it accessible through my PMS and combined with my other weights. And I guess this is the number, the problem really is the information is actually available more and more. It's not a problem of the information being available. It's the context it's available and how it's integrated in with your existing data. So you're not having to do this game where you've got three tabs open and you're trying to jump between the three and then mentally do the gymnastics of that was the 1st of June 2020 and what get the timeline in your head. And that's the sort of potential for mistakes. There is some data that's not available, and that's what you don't know. You don't know you're missing. But more and more, it's the fact that it's done across many different interfaces, and you cannot see it in one place.
Mm. So why is it important to have a single record or source of truth, or have it all in one place for each individual patient across whatever care setting they might be engaging with at the time?
Well, this is what I think I've come to realize with APIs and what's happening in the States with the changes under the Cures Act and the final rule. It's not about having it in one place in order for you to have it in one place in your record. It's having it available via whatever means so the data you need can be seen in your app. Perhaps I say that another way is that it doesn't need to be on one place. You just need to be able to see it in a context that makes sense to your clinical decision-making process. For my example, for weight before, if I could pull weight from five different sites and I don't need to hold it myself, but it's presented in a way I can see it over time and it's done in that time order for me so I can see what's changed over the last week, 2 months, 6 weeks, whatever I need, then that's very helpful. That's what I need. I don't need to have it in my location. And I think it's a mistake I've made many years ago thinking that's needed both from timeliness and speed and trustfulness of the data, but that's certainly not the way the world's going and it's not the way it's going to be. It can actually be in many locations, called on quite quickly. It's how it's presented and given to you is your secret sauce.
And I guess you need to know that you can trust that source of data as well so that before you rely on it for any clinical decision-making.
Oh, absolutely. Before I understood the world of APIs and understood even what FHIR really was and the work the world has gone, I mean, it's how the internet's built, of course, but the level of engineering that's gone on behind these things, it's now obvious that's the way it is going, and you have more levels of trust when it's built correctly in an API-led model than I would in silos of data that having moved around in bespoke ways which don't have any levels of checking and there's no way of going backwards and checking. So with an API-led model, you actually are drawing on the sources in a trusted way that are responsible and accountable for that to be correct, who are maintaining that, and it's all auditable how that's happening. So you're sort of dividing the job of keeping the data accurate and true to the people who are accountable for that, and not transferring it multiple times and every time potentially bringing an error and a mistake into that. So it is the future. It is the way it's going to be, and we need to be able to work in a system that can, well, is, in my opinion, will be more and more API led.
So you've identified the issue and the sort of future state you'd like to see, and you've touched there on what you see as the potential solution. But can you just talk a little bit more about what are APIs and why do you see them as the answer in the way the world's going?
I think the way to look at APIs, and I certainly discovered in my 3 years being here, is one architect put to me is, well, they're just endpoints. They've been around for a long time. There's nothing new about them. They're another way of data being organized and accessible and reusable cheaply. What we've fallen into a trap with is that we associated the data layer with the business rules layer, and then what I'd call the application layer, the layer you're most familiar with, the objects, the fields on the screen, is all one thing, and not realizing that if you had a standardized way of grouping all the data we use in health, having that standardized in how it's accessed and available, then you'd not be building these connections one by one and making decisions each time that are different, and therefore causing more and more burden on the long-term operating expenses of maintaining those things. A great example would be like a menu in a restaurant. If you wanted to change the menu and you couldn't because the person in charge of the menu wouldn't let you touch it, it's impossible to really cater for all sort of different types of preferences or subtle differences in a meal. But if you could make that a more open market and go directly to the ingredients, go directly to instructions around recipes, and just call on them as you need to, then you'd order up your menus as much and as sophisticated as you want. And I think that's what I've realized to come, the whole reason the world's gone this way, it's not just health, is it's like deconstructing the whole ecosystem to its most basics and allowing competition at that functional process application layer. Another way I realized how powerful this is, the way it has to be, is looking at what happened when someone showed me internet banking. I'm sure I'm not telling you anything, Rebecca, about internet banking. I'm sure you use it. But do you use the internet banking app on your iPhone or on your smartphone?
I do indeed, yes.
Do you use it on your desktop much anymore?
No, never.
Never, but you could, right?
And
you
expect, I do. I can. Yes.
Yeah. And so you expect the data to be exactly the same. And if you do a transfer or do a payment on your iPhone to check it in your app on your phone, it's a different experience. It's made for that, and it's usually simpler, and it's got a totally different experience to it. But it's the same data, and it's calling for an API that your desktop would through the browser you use on your desktop, and you could actually use another desktop somewhere else with a different browser, with different interfacing, potentially different processes, should you want it, but it's still calling on the same transactions and the same data, doing the same basic APIs to call. So that allows the flexibility to suit the interface, to suit the user experience, the application. You could be doing something more mobile, so you should have something that's very refined to that. And we don't have that kind of thinking yet in health, and that's the way we've got to go. I think it's the only way we're going to cope with the paperless world being actually more productive, having an application competitive market over APIs, allowing both the patient access to their own data and through health maintenance, but also disease and chronic illness management, but also the clinicians having a selection of apps they could choose, and one day they'll be on the desktop using the desktop, suiting the process they're doing there. They might be doing telehealth, and then they might do a home visit, or might be a district nurse doing wound management and would use an app that does specific functions for them and works for their workflow.
That's a great way to explain it. So that's a good example from banking, but can you give any examples of this working in health? Like, has Health Alliance developed any APIs like this?
Yes, there is a plan. They're quite originally called the IES Strategic Plan, ISSP, which involves us becoming experts in interoperability, among many other things. And the plan's very well thought out, and it has effectively the API operating model is underneath the becoming experts in interoperability. Standardizing is one of the most boring things I'd never thought I'd be involved with, but it's so important. And the world is going ahead and probably starting to outpace us in this area, unfortunately. Everyone, I hope, would have heard of FHIR, but the actual implementation examples happening in the US now under the Cures Act, I believe we're just going to see huge progress. When that juggernaut of a health ecosystem focuses in on something, I think we can see there's going to be some brilliant examples of how we'll have repeatable, reliable APIs over basic areas of health, like your medication list, your lab results, your basic clinical records, that'll be easily accessible through secure ways, so people can start being very clever and creative on the apps they'll design for certain clinical situations.
Mm. Yeah, you've talked about consumers or patients having access to the data through APIs, and people in the health system do talk a lot about the system becoming more consumer or patient-centric rather than provider-centric. But what does that actually mean in practice, and is it possible to achieve without sharing data with patients?
Well, if anyone knows anything about me, I'm a very big advocate of patient portals. And again, a patient portal, when it gets down to it, they weren't standardized APIs, but effectively most of them were based around having a different interface that API to the same data set that the providers are using. I actually think most clinicians are very patient-centric. I don't think many these days are of the picture of the old school, do as you're told, I'm the doctor model. But the incentives we have around how we buy and procure software is very provider-centric, and it provides for networks that only trust the computers inside that network inside a hospital. So from the outset, by the way we bought and built these systems, they've been based around facilities and around providers' workplaces, and therefore the security and the access to them have been built around those networks. Therefore, we do have very provider-centric silos of applications, because that's how we bought them, and that's how we're incentivized to buy them because of the way the system is. But I think the future of having the data available for anyone who's in contact with the patient. I just had an example yesterday, some account from Christchurch needing their paramedic pre-assessment vaccinations, and we had no access to any data. She pulled out her phone and logged into her Christchurch patient portal, call out to my Christchurch GPs, and there it was. And, you know, that was the only access I had to it, because she's outside of the Auckland region. I had no other way of accessing her blood results as well as her vaccinations to be able to make a decision there and then. And I don't know, maybe there'd be an application that the ambulance or students could produce that calls on the lab results, calls on all your vaccinations, and produces a summary of what you need, so you can go to your provider if this is what I need, rather than us scrambling around different databases to do it. But it's a result of the way we've bought things rather than the way providers actually think. I've got a book from 1980s in my GP training called Towards Patient-Centered Medicine, and talking about understanding the journey of the patient, understanding their rules. It's been around for a long time. It's the way necessarily money needs to be managed, but these perverse incentives that have driven us to provide these sort of artificial silos to our databases and being based around provider facilities.
Do you think that the COVID-19 pandemic has pushed forward this agenda, particularly around making patients more aware of their potential ability to access health data, and also as we move forward through vaccination, the need for potentially patients to be able to hold that information and share it, perhaps even outside of the health system, with airlines, other governments if they're going into other countries?
Yeah, I think exactly. It's the catalyst but it's the same problem for everyone. My particular bugbear has been the difficulty I have accessing Waikato information, being in South Auckland, and many of my Māori patients travelling between Waikato and South Auckland, and the data not flowing with them as they cross that artificial silo we have or fence between the northern region and Waikato. I think the virus is, and I've said this in meetings before, it's getting boring, but it doesn't care about our DHB borders. So it's made it really obvious that we need to be able to follow the patient and not be restricted by these artificial borders that our legacy has provided. So the data needs to be liquid. By liquid, we mean called on by the patient wherever they are. And I like your passport analogy. If you need it for that app and it needs to call on your vaccination status for some passport app and you're credentialed and it's all authorized and the rest of it, why wouldn't you do it? Just like you use your business, your Xero app to join up to your bank.
Mm. So just lastly, what is your vision for the future of a health system that has embraced widespread use of APIs for data sharing? Where do you think we're heading? Where would you like to see us in 5-10 years' time?
Yeah, I've done a lot of thinking around that. And I do believe now, having to see the way and the struggles of how we understand whether this is a good thing to buy, have we bought this before, is this duplication, is if we have a true nationally led API model for our basic data, the cost benefits are just phenomenal of having a reliable, reusable data points through those APIs for an explosion improvement in process. By that, I mean an app store kind of ecosystem that can call on those things that will just sort out all sorts of clinical process efficiencies, like that paramedic trying to get understand what vaccines they needed for their course, that we just couldn't do under the traditional go out there, do a big tender, try and do everything for everyone kind of app model of the big applications. So we'd have maybe 10,000 store application that you can be changing, drawing on the same data set, but refined and refined and turning over to suit that need of that particular clinical situation. At the moment, our 80% approach, and it's 80% of the people buying, not necessarily the people who need it, is delivering only for those providers in those big facilities and in certain clinical professions. And I'll put general practice in there as well. This approach would allow us to do what the App Store's done for smartphones. I mean, there'll be an app for that, as the expression goes.
Mm. And I guess if you're getting efficiencies in clinical decision-making, you're also allowing a more sustainable health system of the future in terms of we all know the issues coming our way in terms of lack of GPs and other clinicians and the, you know, patients' acuity and age increasing and the complexity of that. So would this future, do you think, make the health system more sustainable?
That could be a whole podcast in itself. I do believe done well, yes, especially around the untapped huge potential around respecting the ability of a patient to become an expert in their own self and self-determine, self-management. That is, I think, worth it in itself, let alone making providers more efficient in what they do, which is certainly a benefit, but just the great untapped potential of better self-management of patients through their own involvement. And for anyone who wants to look that up, I'll just point them to my old favourite, the Open Notes Project, which has really driven the American law changes around the Cures Act. The Open Notes from Boston, dramatic and amazing improvements in patients' confidence in dealing with their own conditions and trust, better than a medication change would have to be many times better than just the patient understanding what's going on and having confidence in what they should do, has driven this whole area, really. It's called the Open Notes Project. And to me, putting that on steroids is what we need to do here.
Great. Well, it's an exciting future that you've envisioned there. Thanks so much. And thanks for joining me. It's been a really fascinating conversation, and I'm sure our listeners will have learned a lot from it. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe. And if you can take the time to review it, please also do so, as that makes it easier for other people to find and enjoy. Until next time. Thanks for listening to eHealth Talk. Be sure to subscribe and share with your colleagues and friends. eHealth Talk, eHealth News, and the eHealth TV webinar series are supported by Health Informatics New Zealand. cHINS.org.nz for more information and become a member starting at just $17 a month.